So for the Ramban in Parshas Vayera, there is a very, very critical Ramban right at the beginning of the Parsha. It's somewhat well known, but in case you guys don't know it, we will, Mirch Hashem, go through and teach you. If you do know it, hopefully we'll bring out points that you might not have been aware of, or clarify. At the very least, it'll be good chazar. So the Ramban in the very beginning, discussing the vision that Avram has of three Malachim who come to him, and he has a whole encounter with them. We know he runs out, he greets them, he brings them inside. Vazik says right in the beginning that Avram had a vision. And he appeared to him. He's talking about Hashem appearing to Avram. Vayira Elav Hashem is the next word of the pasuk, right? Hashem appears to him. So Lashon Rashi. Rashi explains, what does this pasuk mean? The Bakir is a chola. Hashem came to visit the sick. Avram was sick. Why? Amar b'tama bar b'tanina. Yom shlishi l'milah sohaya. U'bakir shparchu u'bashalbo. It was the third day after Avram's bris milah. He was an old man. He had been 99 years old when he got his bris milah. And it was a painful operation. The third day was the most painful. And Avram was visited by Hashem. Hashem came to be mevaker kol hanashim, and v'hinei shlosh hanashim, and he had these three men come. Hamalachim sheba ilav, and it was hanashim. He had these men come to him. They looked like men, but they weren't really men. They were malachim. Vayochlu, and then later Rashi says, and they ate the food. Niro kamisha achlu. They made it look like they were eating. So Rashi tells us, Hashem came to visit Avram. Hashem sent these three malachim. They came before. They became before him, and Avram served them a whole grandiose meal, wonderful food, and they appear to eat. Often the Ramban will start off by quoting Rashi. He'll show greater deference to Rashi than to Ibn Ezra, as he himself says in the Hakdama. He begins, Rashi, he'll quote, he'll work hard to defend. That's also not only because he held Rashi in very high esteem, but also because Rashi is often quoting Chazal. And, moreover, Ibn Ezra is often not. So he'll often attack the Ibn Ezra cutting. Here, the Ramban quotes Rashi without comment. Rashi is working off of Chazal. And Rashi is answering two very important pshat questions in the Gemara. Not in the Gemara. When you say pshat questions, you think of the Gemara. He's answering two pshat questions in the Pesachos. What did he say? There you go. Take the cookies. Take the cookies. Cookies matter more. Okay, so what are the pshat issues that Rashi is addressing? Number one. The pasuk says, "Vayira ilav Hashem." Hashem appeared to Avram, but the pasuk never tells us that Hashem says anything. Hashem never says anything to Avram. Instead, Hashem just appears. There's no reference of what Hashem said afterwards. That's pretty bizarre. Generally, you'd expect Hashem appears to Avram and he's going to tell Avram something, give him some mensch. And instead, we find nothing here in this week's parsha. He doesn't say anything. So Rashi answers that question. You might wonder, you always have to ask yourself, what's bothering Rashi? I need one. This one doesn't pass in this one. Okay, good. So he says that Hashem came to be Mevaker Chola. You always have to ask yourself, that's what I was just saying. You always have to ask yourself, what's bothering Rashi? Right? You know, there's a book, there's a whole series about that. What's bothering Rashi? You always have to ask yourself, like, why did Rashi bring this particular measure? Why did Rashi make this particular insight, this particular comment in any given context? So what's bothering Rashi? Here it's quite apparent. Hashem appeared and didn't do anything. So what was Hashem doing appearing to Avram? Rashi answers. Rashi says, Beaker colon. And there's a lot to learn from that, how we too should be Mevaker colon. Mahu afata, just as Hashem is going to be Mevaker colon, we too should be Mevaker colon. So Rashi explains that pshat question. Why did Hashem appear and not do anything? Because he came not to do anything other than to keep Avram company. Hashem came just to chill. That's why Rashi says he was Mevaker Chol. The other pshat question Rashi comes to address, these guys are Malachim. Rashi's going with that pshat. Not Nevi'im, as other Rishonim say, they are not Nevi'im, they are Malachim. These messengers are actual spiritual emissaries of God. If that's true, philosophical problem. Spiritual emissaries do not eat. They cannot eat. They cannot consume food. They cannot become physical. What does that mean? That they ate the food. So Rashi tells you, no, don't ask any questions. Here's pshat. What does it mean, vayochlu, that they ate? Nira kimi shachlu. They made it look like they were eating. They made it appear as if they were eating. Now, what exactly does that mean? I can't tell you. I don't know. They sent it off to a different dimension. They made it turn invisible. I don't know. But they made it look like they were eating, because of course they don't have internal organs. What would it have? A purely spiritual entity while it might appear, maybe you can see it, vision is very different than other things. Vision, you can see things that aren't really there, you can not see things that really are there, but for food to go there and be literally consumed by intestines and the whole digestive tract, which don't exist, that doesn't make any sense by Malachim. Therefore, Rush aborts these two shock questions. How could it be that Hashem appeared and did nothing? Because he came to do nothing. He came just to be the Bakar Avram. And how could it be that the Malachim ate food? They can't. They didn't. Rather, they looked like they ate food. Get a question, Rafi?
I was going to say, if these Malachim were taking the human form and they have supernatural powers because they're Malachim, why can't we just say that they really took the human form? They have internal organs for this purpose. What's wrong with
good.
That?
Good. So some Rishonim assume that in rare circumstances, or maybe less rare, but that they have the capacity to turn physical. Now, Rashi, presumably, and we'll see the Rambam, certainly,
I limit them.
Was limiting them, because they think philosophically, logically, it makes no sense to talk about a purely spiritual entity being able to take a physical form. Can they appear before someone? Can Hashem send them a message through someone? Yes. But can they take a physical form? They think that is ludicrous. Now, can I prove it to you and explain all the philosophy behind it? No, but let's take that as a given. Okay, let's move on. Those two questions were answered by Rashi. Now, the Ramban also quotes the Rambam now in Mordechai. A few points about that. During the Ramban's day and age, the Rambam was an extremely controversial figure. Nowadays, some of his thought was... Yeah, the Rambam was not alive in the Ramban's day. But in the Ramban's day and age, not very long after the Rambam had passed away, the Rambam was exceedingly controversial. Particularly his philosophic works, such as Mor Nebuchim, such as parts of his first Sefer in Mishnah Torah, Amada. Very, very controversial figure. In fact, during the time, there was such a uproar over the books between different Chachamim in the days of the Rishonim that they even sent a delegation to the Ramban to find out what exactly the Ramban's opinion was. There were those that were against it, there were those that were pro it. The Radak, the elderly sage of the generation, the Radak, who the Ramban sometimes quotes or is working off of his Pshat in the Chumash, came to the Ramban to find out what the Ramban said, and the Ramban wrote a letter discussing the opinion that he had of the Rambam. Now, fascinatingly, the Ramban often quotes the Rambam, which already is legitimatizing him. He read his works. And moreover, he calls him Harav, which also legitimatizes the Rambam in the eyes of those who might be reading in the days of the Rambam. And finally, he clearly shows Bakias. He's holding in the works of the Rambam. When he quotes him in different contexts, he really, really shows that he must have known the Rambam well. Now, when he quotes him on the Chumash, I used to have the impression that he's always quoting him, you know, sort of like you picture a guy serving a tennis ball. He throws him up, he mentions it, just to slam him down. Now, it's not quite true. It's not quite true. By one count that I saw, he quotes the Rambam in either Mor Nebuchim or Mishnah Torah 40 times in his parish on the Chumash. 24 of those times are antagonistic, but 16 of those times are not. That's not such a bad ratio.
In the latter, doesn't he praise the Rambam?
Of course. Right, so I'm showing that even without directly praising the Rambam, it's very clear that the Ramban held in high esteem. Those that would read the works of the Ramban afterwards would clearly appreciate it. No, in his letter, he came out very strongly on the side of the Rambam. He defends the Rambam in other works of his. Shar Gemuel, he defends him. He writes in the Hasagos on the Rambam, where he attacks the Rambam at length. But the degree that he has to go out to pull out every single thing, and if you ever want to know, I'll just make a side comment. Once Moshe brought me a tip. The Ramban was great. We all know the Ramban was great. The Ramban was exceedingly great. Beyond great that we can possibly imagine. The Ramban is beyond great. However, you might have read some of his works and not appreciated that greatness. I don't know, you open up the Chiddush Ramban on Shas, right? So you open up a Ramban on any particular Septa, and, you know, like Tosfos or other Rishonim, he has a very terse, short comment, maybe a little bit more of an exorcist. You know, he's going and he's explaining things out a little bit more, he quotes an opinion, he attacks, and he brings one riot. Okay, so you see, wow, he was very smart, he knew the Gemara Kol. Or that was a very good logical insight. Now, obviously, as you access more depth, then you can understand how great he was. But it's not as overt, his depth. You have to appreciate him, you have to have that reverence. On his parish, Al-Chumash, you start to see more. The lengths he'll go to attack them and has a ring of 8 questions and show and pshat and other psukim and philosophy, everything, you start to appreciate, wow, this guy, even if you're a simpleton, you're like, wow, this guy was big. Then you look at his Mechamas Hashem, his work against the Baal Mor, defending the Rif, where he knows he's going up against the opponent who brought so many rides against the Rif that instead, what does he do? He brings out more rides, and you see, really, the Ramban in all his shining glory, taking down another one of the Rishonim, showing his greatness. It's remarkable. When you read Mechamos Hashem, you cannot walk away but be impressed by the gods of the Rambam. In my personal opinion, when he takes down the Rambam. In the Hasagos. The Rambam has his Hasagos, his comments, his critique of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot. So it's Shrushim, really. When he goes and he attacks that which the Rambam does, you see in what high esteem he held the Rambam, because there you encounter the Ramban in all his glory. You know, it's not like where you go and you see two gedolim, you see them sitting at a wedding together, and one of them says, "Oh, what about this gemara?" But the other gemara, you don't really see everything. Here, he lays it all out for you. The Rambam makes the point. He makes it look like the Bahag, he's caught with his pants down. The Bahag makes no sense at all. And then the Ramban brings out 14, 17 gemaras. Like, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. Oh my gosh. So this was before Bar Ilan, guys. This was somebody who knew everything, and his insight is so deep. You cannot help but be in awe. If you open up the Hasagos, it's nuts. It's nuts. Anyhow, the Ramban, hopefully we will mine some depth. But it's not as overt always how great he was. There, you can't help but be impressed. Anyhow, that, I think, part of Oshla was because of the fact that he held the Rambam in such high esteem, and he knew the Rambam was so influential, and the Rambam had such compelling proofs, and he really made the Bahag look like he just got the floor swept with him, that he had to come in strong. He had to show exactly why he was wrong. We can talk more about it after, but that's the point I wanted to make. Let's move on. Okay, so here he quotes the Rambam in Moreh Avuchim. He quotes the Rambam in Moreh Avuchim, which again, he said 40 times in the Peirush HaTorah, he quotes the Rambam in Moreh Avuchim. Don't get the impression that he's always quoting him as, like I said, it's a volleyball serve or a tennis serve, he's going to whack him down. Sometimes, 24 of the times he's antagonistic, 16 of the time he's pro the Rambam. So here he's going to be antagonistic. Let's see. V'sefer Moreh Nevuchim. And in the Moreh Nevuchim it writes, Nemar ki parsha klal uprat. This parsha is a klal uprat. What's a klal uprat, guys? You read, hopefully, the Brisa of Rabbi Yishmael. What's a klal uprat? A broad statement and then a particular statement. Broad, then particular. What does broad, then particular signify? When the Torah first says something, I don't know, I say, this man is really wealthy. This man's really wealthy. He's got a yacht. He's got a Ferrari. He's got a huge house. Are those different statements? No. I state the broad statement. He's really wealthy. Then I list the particular. So I'm just defining the broad statement. The Rambam says this Parsha's Vayera is an instance of Klal Uprat. How so? He's answering the same Pshat question as Rashi. What was the Pshat question Rashi said? Vayera Elohim Hashem. Hashem appears before him and does nothing. Oh, you know what Pshat is according to the Rambam? Vayera Elohim Hashem. Hashem appeared to him. Broad statement. Here are the details. The whole story, the beginning of Vayera, is a vision. It didn't happen in reality. It did not happen in the physical universe. It was a vision that Abraham experienced. Hashem appeared to Abraham, broad, particular. Three men appeared to Abraham. Abraham had a nevuah that has occurred. But this did not actually occur. Abram was not sitting outside in the hot sun. Abram did not chase after three men. That's what the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim says. It was a vision that Abram saw himself doing this. Now, I'm not saying Abram was daydreaming. Don't get the wrong impression. The Rambam's not saying that. But that Abram had, you know, some thoughts. No, he had a nevuah. Hashem appeared to him. This was a nevuah. This was very, very serious and is included in our Torah. That being said, it didn't happen in the terrestrial world. It didn't happen here. It was a vision that Abram had. A remarkable comment by the Rambam. How did that answer these two pshat questions, guys? The two that Rashi was bothered by as well. Number one, Vayiri Elav Hashem. Hashem doesn't do anything. Rashi says he was coming to be Mevakar Kolam. He wasn't doing anything. He was just chilling with Avram. Rambam says, no. Hashem appeared to him. That's the cloud. Then come the pratim of all the details. What about the other pshat question Rashi was addressing? Malachim can't eat. So according to Rashi, they made it look like they were eating. Rambam says, they didn't eat. It was a vision. Anything can happen in a vision. Again, Lahabdu, I don't mean to compare this to a random dream. But in your random dream, anything can happen in your imagination. So also, the vision that Avram was experiencing, that Hashem sent him, of three men coming to him, the men looked like they ate. They didn't actually eat, because Malachim cannot eat. Yes, Rafa.
Seems extremely dismissive of Rashi.
Dismissive of Rashi? I mean, he's arguing Rashi. They both are bothered by the same two problems. It's a different problem. I don't... The Rambam wasn't commenting on Rashi per se. It was commenting
on Rashi, but Rashi completely assumes that it happened in reality. So
of course,
to say that Rambam saying it's basically saying it's ridiculous to think it happened in reality. It must have been a dream. So Rashi thinking that it was in reality.
Rambam never quotes Rashi.
I know he doesn't, but this Peshat, I think
good,
this
good, good, no, correct. Okay, basically, Rashi. I think most scholars assume the Rambam did not have access to Rashi. Rambam maybe even heard Pshatim from France. You know, they had heard maybe of different Pshatim that had floated out there. I don't think it's assumed that he had. I don't think that was Rafi's point. The basic point that Rafi's asking is that isn't the argument on Rashi? How can he say that Rashi's saying it happened in reality and Rambam's saying it's not? Rashi's giving other answers, Rambam's giving these answers.
Precisely.
Different where you're showing
Rambam,
him our entitled
opinion. Rambam never saw Rashi.
So. Presumably not. No. He was not that much later after. Guys, when did Rashi live? Anybody know when Rashi lived?
1040.
Rashi lived during recess. Rashi lived during recess. 1040 to 1105. That was what my elementary school Rebbe Am told me, and you know what? It stuck. Rashi lived from 1040 to 1105. Okay, when the Rambam lived, in 1100. 1130. Okay, good. Excellent. Now, let's move on. That's the Rambam Shita. Is the Ramban going to sit with that? You know, the Ramban is not going to sit with that. That's not how the Ramban's going to interpret this story. Not as a Kalut Pratt. So now, the Ramban begins to attack us. He's got four initial questions. You should know, generally, look, there's other ways to break it up. This is relatively arbitrary, but I will give you five. In my opinion, look, you can reclassify it how you want. Five types of questions the Ramban generally must use. Okay, this is my breakdown. There might be other ways. Again, it's relatively arbitrary, but I'll stick with this. Five types of questions the Ramban uses. Number one, from logic. That just doesn't make any sense. It cannot be for a logical problem. Number two, a textual problem. It doesn't fit the text. You're claiming this shot makes sense. It doesn't. It fits poorly in the text. A third type, the simple meaning of the text. What I would call, come on, questions. It just, not shot though from like the fact that it doesn't fit the words. Just like, that is, if any 5-year-old who reads this doesn't get that impression, and any 6-year-old who reads this doesn't get that impression, it just, come on, that's not what it means. It's different than a textual problem because it doesn't fit the words. It just, that's not what the story's trying to tell us. That's not what it sounds like if you just read it in a simple fashion. He'll have those type of questions. Additionally, he'll ask from other pasukim. You claim this word means this. Oh yeah, but what about this pasuk? You claim this story's about this, yet this pasuk talks about that story and has a different interpretation. A different type from other pasukim. And lastly, same as from Chazal. Ignoring where Chazal were coming from, but simply Chazal say this, and therefore you're going against Chazal. It's how I would break up five different types of questions. We'll show now how the Ramban musters all of these in different forms right now against the great Rambam. He's quite cutting in his attacks. We'll see over here, uncharacteristically so. He really attacks the Rambam very, very harshly in some terms. He is usher, ultimately, to believe what the Rambam said here. So, the Rambam said it. I'm not telling you it's usher, but the Ramban says it's going to be usher to believe what the Rambam said here. Now, one other point before we go on, just another historical component. In my, the Chumash I use generally is this Torah's Chaim one. One of those things that I got as a bar mitzvah present. I did not open it until I came back from Shana Aleph. I came back from Shana Aleph and I looked around my room. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have a treasure trove here I didn't even know about. It's amazing. So then, since then, you know, past number of years, I've been using it diligently. I love it. Anyhow, they often quote, whenever they quote the Rambam, they quote this Sefer HaZikaron. What's the Sefer HaZikaron? It was a work written by the Ramban's own Grand Talmud, the Ritva. They quote the Ritva. In fact, I have the full Sefer HaZikaron in case anyone wants it on my computer. I can be happy to share it with you. It's fantastic. And the Ritva often defends the Rambam where the Ramban attacks it. Okay? Now you know. Excellent. So,
the Ritva is the Talmud, the Grand Talmud of the Ramban.
The Grand Talmud of the Ramban. Of the Ramban.
Okay.
Right. Yes, generally followed. Amito Shotora. Reading the truth of Torah. He's going to fight and say that, hey, you're not reading them carefully. And sometimes his comments are really sharp also. He says, the Ramban always claims other people didn't read the earlier works carefully enough and therefore he has to show them. He says, you didn't read the Rambam carefully enough. Right? It's a fascinating work. Okay, let's move on though. Let's start to get into the questions with the Rambam. Okay, I'm not going to read this inside. You can look over there. Right? I marked off Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet are the first four questions he's going to level against the Rambam in paragraph 2 over there. So his four questions are going to be like this. Number one, textually. If this whole thing was a vision, men eating, talking, etc., what does it mean, Vayira Hashem? Hashem appeared. Vayira, you love Hashem. Hashem appeared. Hashem's not in the story! Okay, so the Rambam presumably would say it was a divine vision. It was a vision of Hashem. It was a nevuah. But still, the Ramban definitely has the pashup shot on his side here. Hashem doesn't talk in this story. Hashem doesn't do something in this story. Hashem's not here. Eventually, yeah, he tells Avram, why did Sarah laugh? But like, that. That wasn't why Hashem appeared to him. You don't see Hashem directly talking to him. It just doesn't seem like it, therefore, from the text itself. Additionally, a second point. There's no precedent for such a terminology that it refers to Hashem and then doesn't come to have Malachim only talking, nothing to do with Hashem elsewhere in Tanakh. Now, I don't know Tanakh. Let's take the Rambam for it. Now, the Rambam didn't know Tanakh. And the Rambam may say, well, what about here and here? Okay, I was holding the Chabakon. But I'm not. And presumably, the Rambam might have had other defenses, but the Rambam's saying there's no precedent where you have it. Hashem appears, and then Hashem doesn't talk at all. He doesn't like this. He doesn't like this. Additionally, a third question. This one's one of those ones that I just think is just, come on. He asks, to say that all these detailed events didn't actually take place, it's just not shot on the puzzle. Even if you were right, like the puzzle I handed you, like Hashem appeared to him, the story, the Torah in general doesn't do this. The Torah never sounds like this. It's just not what the puzzle sounds like. Everyone knows Rashi's push-up shot. You read the story, it sounds like it actually had Avram listening outside in the heat. He runs after the people. Ramon's not willing to buy. And lastly, his fourth question, at least at this stage that he asked, is that, what about all the details? When there's a vision from Hashem, there's a nevuah. Hashem's trying to tell you something. So let's say here Hashem was trying to tell Avram about the destruction of Sodom, let's say. Or Hashem was coming to tell Avram, whatever the Rambam would say. Hashem was telling Avram about the fact that Sarah was going to have a baby again, even though he already did this. But whatever it was that he's going to do, Hashem wanted the whole story with Sarah to happen. Whatever it was, what about all the details? Why did Avram have to have such a detailed story? And Avram then envisions himself, and then the Torah tells us this, running to tell Sarah to hurry up, and then to go and get the right animals, and to tell the boy to go get water, and then the whole story. What do we need all those details for? So again, to counter for the Rambam, you could say, because for us, well, that wasn't maybe the main message for Avram. Avram knew he was doing that in the story. He saw a lot of details. But for us, there's a lot to learn from that. There's a lot of mussar to take from exactly how Avram did Zachnas Orchim in the story. But nonetheless, the Ramban's point is still a valid one. He's saying, why all the details? This is just a nebuah. Why all the details? So four initial attacks against the Rambam. Now, he brings another example of the Rambam doing this. Can anybody guess where? You know where? Don't say. Where's another example where you have a malach doing something that, according to the Rambam's philosophy, a malach should not do, should not be able to do? Where else do you have a malach in Sefer Bereishis? Go for it.
The malach hurting Yaakov.
Excellent. Very good. By Yavik Ishimo, this strange encounter in the dark of night, Parshas Vayishlach, very beginning, Yaakov encounters a malach and wrestled with a malach. Guys, the malach cannot eat. A malach cannot wrestle. The Rambam says, that's also a vision. Also a vision, the Rambam says. Also a vision. Yaakov had a vision that he had this fight, and the Rambam feels the steam coming out of his ears here. You can't do that to the Torah. What does he say? Let's read. He asked a few more questions. Number one, if it was just a vision, why was Yaakov limping afterwards? Right? Yaakov actually had a limp. Therefore, we do not eat the Gidonasha, the Torah says. Yaakov actually was limping afterwards. How was Yaakov limping if he just had a dream? So you say, it was a very intense dream. He rolled over, back way, this and that. You know, Kai Pasha, right? We're learning Baba Kama this year. Where you kick all around in your sleep, especially grabbing an intense dream. So maybe he banged his leg on a rock. Come on. Right, their mind's not willing to buy that. And maybe because these Nebuah type of dreams are very, very intense, and therefore you could, like, actually have things that happen in a Nebuah occur in reality also. Their mind's not willing to buy that either. He obviously fought somebody and got hurt. Another question. Why would Yaakov Avinu later comment that he escaped with his life? It was a vision, Yaakov. Calm down. You're fine. It was just a dream. It was just a Nebuah. You escaped with your life? Clearly, the Ramban says, it must have been a reality. Yaakov fought an attacker and survived. Yaakov won. Yaakov therefore said, I escaped my life. That's the Ramban levels against the Rambam. And thirdly, he says as well, the Ramban says, moreover, if you want to say, oh, he was afraid that he had, from the vision, you know, you could say, after all, we know, for example, by Manoah, that was Shimshon's father in Shoftim, right? His father saw a vision with his wife, and they didn't realize that it was a malach, and then afterwards, what they thought was a Navi stepped into fire and went up to Shemayim. Whoa! They were so afraid, they said, oh no, we've seen God and we're going to die. They saw such a vision that blew their mind. They thought that they had no chance of survival. So lest you say that's Yaakov meant, that he saw a vision that was such an intense vision. He's like, I escaped with my life. I can't believe I saw a vision of God and survived. Raman says, don't say that. Yaakov had more intense visions than this. What about Beit El? He saw Hashem himself, so to speak, on top of a ladder. He had a way more intense vision. He had spoken to Hashem before. See, one malach at one point, that's not so intense. There's no way he could have been saying that. Therefore, the Ramban
levels a whole attack against the Rambam. He's not having it. He just rejects this. Now, where was the Rambam coming from? What was the philosophy that was backing this interpretation? You know, before we go into it, let me make one more important disclaimer. Both the Rambam, Rimon and Rebuchim, both the Ramban, are very not into reading things out of their Pashup Shat. They're not into allegorizing, understanding stories in the Torah as being metaphor. Because if you get carried away, before you know it, nothing in the Torah happened, or whatever you want to say can happen. You can interpret anything in any ridiculous way. The Rambam has very, very, very harsh words for the Karaites, or more particularly for the Christians who do this, and they come up. I'll give you one example. The Rambam is like, the Torah could not have been more clear. I forget where this is. My name is Taman. Where is one of his letters? And I guess Taman. I don't remember exactly. It's one of his places where the Rambam just like says this, and it's such a great example because, to me, it's like, I hope I don't make any of you think that this is actually true, because this is so obviously not true. I'll tell you a Christian shot. Okay, you ready? How do you know that the Trinity, the fact that they have three gods, but they're really one, how do you know it's true? Shema Yisrael, Hashem, one. Elokeinu, two. Hashem, three. Echad is one. The Trinity is one. The Rambam says, the Torah could not have been more clear about what it was trying to tell you. Hashem, our God, that guy, he's one. And yet, you can warp anything, if you rationalize, you go ahead and you change it into whatever you want, you can change whatever you want into anything. The Torah could not have been more clear. There's one God. Nah. There's three that are one. The Rambam is not into taking things out of their simple meaning. He says, read it, pshuto k'mashmo. He just felt here, philosophically, you have to say that this is true. Rav Sajid Gaon in Emunah B'Deos has a number of conditions of when you're allowed to allegorize a story, understand it as a metaphor or a symbolism. He says sometimes, for example, when things are so logically or philosophically impossible, the simple meaning is actually not as it's taken literally by somebody who's too much of a literalist, but that's ridiculous. He gives one example by Chava being Eim Kol Chai, right? The Chava was the mother of all living creatures. You think that means that she gave birth to everything? First of all, the Torah tells us that things preceded her. Second of all, just doesn't make any sense that a woman like had butterflies and dolphins and everything that's alive come out of her uterus. That's stupid. The Rav Sajid Gaon therefore says obviously Eim Kol Chai doesn't mean that she gave birth to everything, she's the mother of everything. Rather, it means something more symbolic. Or similarly, that Hashem is Esh Ochla. Hashem, your God, is a burning fire. Hashem is not a fire. Hashem is much, 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 much beyond the fire. So obviously it's symbolism trying to convey something. That's where you should know and interpret. And the Rambam obviously felt here that it was too philosophically impossible, too logically impossible to state that this was actually an occurrence, and therefore he rejects it. Now the Rambam had a few reasons why. We already mentioned one, that Malachim cannot take a physical form, they couldn't eat the food, right, and also this Kalu Prat. So let's see some of his philosophical reasons. Now often you can learn from the Ramban's attacks what the defenses were for the Rambam, or what the Rambam was thinking, because he says, and don't tell me this, or something like that. So he basically lists four things that the Rambam had going for him. Number one, what about the fact, aside from the fact that they can't be physical, right, that a malach can't be physical, that was already assumed, that's what we've been discussing about other things. Number one, what about the fact that generally your physical senses can't perceive a malach? Right? You can't generally see, perceive a malach, and yet it seems like he actually saw them, and if we're not talking about a vision, what he actually saw a malach, he's assuming that any time a malach appears, it is some sort of vision, because you physically can't perceive things that are purely spiritual. That's one of the philosophical backings of the Rambam. Another point that the Rambam has, and this is something that the Rambam holds very strongly, and the Ramban holds very much not true. That first one, the Ramban generally agrees to. The second one is not true, according to the Rambam. And that is that the Rambam thinks that you have to be on the level of a Navi in order to perceive a malach. Somebody who's not a Navi can't perceive a malach. A malach requires somebody to be on an exceedingly high level in order to experience that. Now, the Ramban attacks that heavily. Number one, Chazal say that Daniel wasn't a Navi, and yet Daniel encountered Malachim all the time. Daniel, right? He spoke to Nevi'im. Number two, Daniel's Sefer isn't included in Nevi'im, Dafka, because of that point, and is in Ksuvah. Clearly, though, yet he saw a malach. Yet, he wasn't a Navi. So, how can you claim that in order to, like, see a malach, you have to be a Navi? That's just not true with Daniel on two accounts. Moreover, Hagar definitely isn't one of the Nevi'im, or Nevi'ot, as it would be. Right? And yet she encounters Nevi'im a couple of times. The pasuk says that Hashem spoke to the Avos with the name Kel Shakai, which is one of his names. Now, part of the Rambam's backing also was that the Rambam believes that all the Nevi'im, because of this Yisod of his, only spoke to Hashem through a Navi, through a mouth. Not directly to Hashem. And the Rambam thinks that's also just utterly wrong. What about Avraham? They all spoke to Hashem. And like some of the proofs that the Rambam brings, oh, how come they always have Nevi'im? How come they always have Malachim talking to the Nevi'im? That's for other reasons. You know what? I'm going already over time, so I want to end soon. The point is that Rambam brings out a few points that relate to his general philosophy, which the Rambam himself then attacks and disproves for a variety of reasons. In fact, afterwards, I printed out a bunch of my notes on this one. On some parts, I actually prepared notes. So if anybody wants to see some of the points I was making, or other ones, I hope I include most of them, feel free to take one of these English copies afterwards. Kedai to see, if you want. But let's just jump to the conclusion, just because of the sake of time. In the conclusion, the Rambam has a restatement. He deflects the Rambam's things. His whole idea is that the Rambam is wrong. It's not a kalupra. It's not a vision that Avram had. Rather, what was it then? Is he going to say Rashi's pshat? Is he going to say something else? Let's see. What's pshat? He ends off deflecting the Rambam, saying that seeing Malachim doesn't make you a Navi, it's just a vision. So how will he deal with the questions on the story? He says as follows, that Malachim can somehow be perceived by people finely attuned in certain circumstances. Although he's not going to go into that more. One example that I thought of is if you look at the Ramban by Bilam's donkey. Bilam's donkey was somehow able to perceive a Navi, right? Doesn't that go against the Ramban? How do you explain that? It's a donkey, right? It's not a Navi. And yet it encounters a Malach. So the Ramban there explains that at certain times, animals have a higher sensitivity to the world around us. You know, like when you see birds flying away from some disaster before it hits, or dogs are barking, when they know something's gone, they can sense it, hear it, smell it. They know something's in the air more than us humans. Sometimes they can perceive things if you're finely attuned. And so too people. You don't have to be a great tzaddik, but you can be finely attuned to even perceiving a Malach with your physical senses. Part of the Rambam's philosophical issue is that you can't physically see a Navi. What does it mean that he saw them? A person cannot physically see a Malach. What does it mean he saw them? Sometimes you can, actually. If you're highly attuned to it, on some level, they exist in the physical world as well. What does that mean? He says he'll elaborate more elsewhere. He can't go into it more. We'll have to leave it. And as for when it says Hashem, it switches off with a Navi and a Navi's vision, whether it's a Malach or Hashem, that point also he's not going to go into. But basically, it seems like, again, he started off by quoting Rashi, and then he goes and quotes the Rambam, and blasts, in his opinion at least, the Rambam to smithereens. So where does that return us to? Presumably Rashi. Right? Rashi's pshatim are good pshatim. So, at least the first point has a very obvious musar point for us. Overall, the musar that we should be taking from a Rambam like this is to see what Gaonim, our Chachmi HaMasora, were, and how deeply they cared about Torah, how they would work out every little detail to make sure they understood it to its truest thing, and would bring proof after proof after proof to care. They would work hard to figure it out. That's obvious. I don't think we need to take that musar out of it. You should take a musar every time you open up a sefer. The simple musar is just what Rashi starts off with. Hashem b'chvodu ba'atzmo, came and visited Avram Avinu when Avram was sick. Later on, Rashi l'shitaso in one pshat, Rashi later says, when it says, I don't want to say, it says, Adon Shem, on one level, he could say, my masters, please wait here with me and stay here and let me serve you. He could be talking to the malachim that had come to him. Or Avram could be saying, as Rashi says in his other pshat, that it's kadosh, that it's really Adon Shem. He's referring to Hashem here. He says, Hashem, I got to go do bigger kolam. I got to do hachanas zorcham right now. Even though Hashem himself had come to visit him. I think both of these points are so important for us to take away in a week like this when we read all about hachanas zorcham, hachanas zorcham, hachanas zorcham. Mitzvah, Bein Adam L'Chaver. Last week, the Gross Shabbaton, we had Bein Adam L'Chaver. Something to focus on. Certainly, certainly, this time of year, not all year round. And that is, that you see, no matter how great you are, no matter how great you are, you could be Hashem, you could be Avram Avinu, having a meeting with Hashem, and like you think that's about as lofty as it gets. Hashem came just to hang out with you, not even to tell you anything, just to spend time with you, to take care of you. And yet Avram runs away to go into a mitzvah, to take care of some poor Arab passing by. Or Hashem himself comes to visit Avram Avinu. He had nothing better to do with his time, so to speak. That for all of us, we should understand that chesed, mitzvos, are an opportunity. They're not something which is a burden, not something which we try to shirk and hope somebody else will do it. It's something we have an opportunity to take advantage of. To jump in, to run. This whole story just breathes Avram's reasons and excitement for mitzvos. And we should realize it's not below our dignity. It's the greatest kavod we could possibly have to be involved with mitzvos. To take advantage, to jump at any opportunity you could to help somebody else out. And therefore, become the true people that we're supposed to be, and Ovdei Hashem that we're supposed to be. Good job.